Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here once again, as usual, in the studio. Just got all kinds of things to discuss today. But first things first, I'd like to welcome everybody back. You know, the regulars we live for. But what grows a show is all you new folks. So if you have stumbled on this or been told about it or whatever, try to stick around for the hour, because I promise you in the course of that time there'll be something you pick up that might be useful. At least something you didn't know, hopefully something useful that you didn't know. So it's our goal here in our ninth year, and here we are now in the second half of that even. It's just amazing how time goes by, as you all are probably aware. So I guess without further BS or whatever it is, introduction, a better word probably, and I think we should talk about, wow, what a dramatic turn things made, or as I retitled the market this week, well, Monday was fun.
Yeah, I mean, it was overdue. I predicted this would happen.
Well, we said that last week.
Yeah, I thought it would happen 2 or 3 weeks ago. The market had been trading in overbought territory for so long, I was worried they were going to start labeling overbought as the new normal. And that is just not a sustainable state for the market. I really expected this prior to this. It was a bad week. It wasn't the end of the world by any stretch. And in fact, this summer has seen the markets go only one way for the most part. There really hasn't been much in the way of a pullback at all. So pretty interesting. More reversion to the mean. The NASDAQ, it's been up the most this year. It pulled back the hardest, and it was down 2.8%. S&P dropped 2.3%, and the Dow 1.1%. All three indexes are still up for the year and for this quarter for that. The charts look very good, and there is a bit more room to fall before they test out those moving averages, but don't be surprised if that happens or doesn't happen. We could easily turn around next week, or we may go down and test out that 50-day moving average. So, yeah, that's where we are. And we actually have a caller.
Alrighty. Good morning. Bob. Okay.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm calling you from lovely Amelia Island today.
Well, I can think of much worse places to be.
Oh, absolutely. It's raining in Jacksonville, but it's very nice up here.
Oh, good. So what's on your mind?
I wanted to thank you all for helping me with a decision process that I made this week with the J&J Kenview spinoff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was very nice of you to consult with me. And
it's a very public thing that's going on and affects a lot of people, because Jacksonville is the home of quite a bit of J&J. So I think if you want to talk about it a little bit, I'm wide open.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's when I was looking at the prospectus and the summary, it said even though you may choose not to do anything, you still may be affected. You know, so
right.
That's where I was like, okay, I need a professional to talk to. So.
Yeah, and for those of you that don't know what we're talking about, J&J did a spinoff of. You probably know a little bit better than we do. If you want to say what it was that they're spinning off,
their consumer products division.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, most of us are thinking medical when we think J&J,
right?
But it's not 100%
consumer
true.
Tylenol and other brands that mm-hmm. are out there. So it was their consumer products division. So and they've spun that off. It's now separate. So giving everybody the opportunity to participate in that if they choose to do so.
Yeah, the theory on the street many times is that the whole is not equal to the sum of the parts. And in many cases, the sum of the parts is really much larger than the original. And we saw that a little bit with one of ours that spun off a little real estate thing years ago. Remember that? And mm-hmm. that puppy went wild.
Yeah.
That didn't affect the parent at all.
There can be other reasons to spin off. Right. I mean, underperforming can be
viability. A lot of things.
Yeah.
But in this case, we all agreed on something, which was we like the medical end of the business a lot. And the market values since the announcement of the spinoff seem to prefer the medical end of it too. So we said, without going into a great big rigmarole, I'd probably just stick with the original.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we appreciate it. And we listen every week, as you know.
Well, we appreciate that too.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we don't call in, but come on, people out there. I know a lot of people are listening. Get on the phone and give them a ring.
And, you know, you do this for years and years, as we have, and you know they're there because every once in a while somebody says something, and it's not surprising, but it's comforting, I guess, to know that we don't do all of this for no reason at all. And frankly, our business has been very, very good, so we appreciate all of you out there.
Yes. Well, you guys have a good rest of your day.
Well, thank you. It's always fun to get a little verbal pat on the back.
There you go.
Thanks for the call, Bob.
Yeah, that was not something that you can just say, well, I'd do this. Got to look at it a little bit. But when your opinion and the market seem to be reflective of each other, you kind of got a feeling that there's a lot of people who feel like we do.
Yep. And also, most likely you bought J&J not for the consumer products division. You bought it for the drug portion of the company because that is the what it's known for. And so if you bought it for the consumer products, then by all means you should spin off and take the spin off. But if you bought it for the core of the company, you should stick with the core, in my opinion.
One way or the other, it's been one heck of a ride for the Johnson family.
Yeah.
Been very successful. They are having a little problem with the lawsuit against the talcum powder thing, but like all things of that nature, some judge will agree to some amount of money, and then they're going to put it to bed, and everybody will forget about it.
Most likely.
Yeah. That'll happen, I think. All right. Anyway, back to this week in the market.
Yeah. The selling wasn't just contained to the U.S. International stocks got hit pretty hard as well. Brazil and Hong Kong were down more than 4%. And Australia, Canada, Germany, Mexico, and Spain were all down more than 3%. Commodities have been sort of a mixed bag, with oil rallying and natural gas, gold, and silver all falling. Fixed income fell as well because interest rates rose. Even a fairly large drop in interest rates on Friday afternoon couldn't save some small losses in fixed income. And we haven't talked much about crypto this year. It's kind of fallen off the radar, but it's generally been a decent year to be a crypto investor.
Yeah, it's holding up well.
Yeah, Bitcoin's up from about 20,000 at the beginning of the year to about 30,000. Seems like maybe some of the volatility of the previous years has at least lessened. And that doesn't mean that couldn't come back, but that is not what we're seeing right now. We're nothing like the extreme volatility after that fall from 60,000 to 15,000 or wherever it ended up. I don't remember, but it hasn't been quite as bad as it was a little while ago.
Okay, we've got about 20 seconds or so until when we come back over the trivia and so on. I wanted to mention one more thing about J&J. You hear us frequently talk about not being into the individual stock picking thing. I have long loved J&J because I consider it its own mutual fund or exchange-traded fund. Just for the record. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And we, as usual, have a trivia question sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. The situation in the East is changing a bit with the sort of reawakening of the country of Japan. Those of you who are of a sufficient age remember that in the 80s, Japan was the hot stock market. They were very aggressive. They were buying everything in sight. And it looked like perhaps they were getting a little over their skis, which later turned out to be exactly right, as they more or less imploded. And they have tried for a couple of decades to do something that would work, and they keep trying things that don't work, so they keep trying them again. It's the, I guess, this old definition that we all know of insanity. But they had a little policy switch here recently. They are now allowing their bonds to go how high on yield? It's a whole percentage number could be negative, could be positive. I'm not going to give you that. Just how high are they allowing bond yields to get in Japan? How about that?
All right. Yeah, you could. There's a pretty interesting case study in Japan around how not to manage an economy.
That's exactly right. That's a B school favorite by now, I'm sure.
Oh, man. It's been a disaster over really there, and it keeps getting worse. I mean, it's just now showing a little.
And now, look what else is happening over there. Their population is imploding so fast.
That's their biggest thing, is that they're very, very xenophobic, I guess.
I can't call it anything else.
They do not allow anyone into their country. And their birth rate is so low that they're not anywhere close to replacing themselves. So they are shrinking as a country, and you can imagine what that does for things like their retirement system, their social safety, not at all. Because there's more people taking them than paying in, and that is a recipe for disaster.
If the birth rate does not change, and this is a little bit different, but not that different. I kind of think South Korea and Japan are about the same level of sophistication. You know, South Korea is a very upbeat thing. If they don't increase their birth rate, they will be extinct in 100 years.
That's crazy.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, wouldn't you think somebody would want to do something about that?
But that's sort of just that. That's one thing. And then also, no one can afford to live in Tokyo. It's one of the most expensive cities in the world. And the reason people aren't having kids, or one of the many reasons, is that they can't afford them. Right. It is so expensive, and you cannot get a two-bedroom apartment. It's just out of most people's price range. And it's just they have a whole host of problems that are not – there are no easy solutions for them.
No, Europe is doing the whole thing. All of Europe is doing the whole thing. Now, we are too. We're below replenishment rate, but we're not that far below.
We're not in. And we also, you know, different administrations have different immigration policies, right. but we do allow immigrants into this country at a pretty high rate.
The estimates of our growth are between about 150,000 and 200,000 people a month overall. Well, that's pretty solid. And of course, it is largely immigration. And in Europe, they're getting immigration also, but it's not a good kind. They're not, the people coming in from the Middle East and Africa and so on, they're not going there to become European. And I still hope that many of the people that come in here are coming here to become Americans.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
I do too. I mean, look at all the people you meet that are obviously from somewhere else, but speaking good English, doing normal things. But in Europe, they're just not doing that. They're very they're clannish, and they're not willing to assimilate. So they got big problems over there, folks.
Yeah, that birth rate is a real problem around the world. Everything's gotten so expensive, and anyways, we got off track. But
yeah, but it's about your money.
Yep, it is true. Don't be discouraged if you lost some money this week. You have to think about where we are especially relative to expectations. Going into this year, I was thinking, okay, if we can see 7%, that's a good year. Right now, we're sitting even after this week, we're sitting at a 16.6% gain on the S&P 500. Okay. July was an awesome month. It was the Russell 1000 average stock gained 4.4%. It was true from the top of the index to the bottom of the index. And in fact, some of the smaller companies even outgained some of the bigger companies.
Yep.
And August, performance tends to be poor when the market is already up year to date. So this is not a trend that is unusual to see. Mm-hmm. And there's no real clear data that would say what the rest of the year is going to do. It's kind of all over the place. So, but even if we closed out the year where we are now, I would say it's been a really good year.
We can put a feather in our caps on that one.
Heck, we could lose 6% and still have a 10% year.
Yeah.
So
isn't that amazing?
I really wouldn't get too worked up about one bad week. It's just not the end of the world.
I absolutely agree. All right, let's talk jobs.
Oh, I was going to mention earnings first. I want to talk a little bit.
You know, that's a good point, because that's another on the plus side of where are we going
so
far.
Yeah, definitely. The numbers look better this week. We saw Amazon and Apple report earnings, and that kind of marks the middle of earnings season. So far, we've seen 71% of companies beat on earnings and 61% beat their revenue estimates. That 61 is higher than it was last week, so this was a good week for revenue.
And I would like the first one to be higher than the second one anytime. I'll take that every month.
And that's normally the case. Yep. Both of those numbers are above historical averages. And the best news, and probably most surprising news, is that more companies are raising guidance than lowering guidance. And that's the opposite of what you would expect if you were headed into a recession. So I was real happy to see that. I wanted to talk briefly about Amazon's quarterly report, which was just awesome. There was really no sign of a recession at Amazon at all. The expectation was for them to get $132 billion in revenue for the quarter, and they topped that with $134 billion. But that wasn't the impressive part. They were expected to make 35 cents per share in earnings. That came in at 65 cents per share.
That's impressive.
That is crazy. And then they also upped their guidance for next quarter to come in above where the previous guidance was. So they're expecting to grow in the third quarter. And really just a strong report. And at one point yesterday, before the market turned south, their stock was up 9%.
Yeah, and if you want a little verification of what's going on in the real estate market, Walmart is looking pretty good on the online stuff too. Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of people are taking it away from Target, which sort of laid an egg.
Yeah, they've had some issues. I don't know that they're – I think Target is not going to I don't think that they will – fall into the Bud Light category. I think that they'll probably recover, but it might take a little bit.
Yeah, well, it's still a great company, and the stores are convenient, and the prices are good.
Yeah,
all that. I do not avoid going there because of that. I just do more online shopping, I think makes me pretty normal.
If I can avoid going to a store, I will. It has nothing to do with what they're selling.
That's a very good point.
So we did see the jobs reports come out this week. The ADP report was stronger than expected at 324,000 new private sector jobs. And then the non-farm payrolls report showed an increase of 187,000, which was slightly below estimates, but not a bad number. What are your thoughts?
Well, that you subtract 49 from May and June on top of that. Mm-hmm. And my thoughts are, if you throw in the household survey, which was astronomical, I'm confused. Again,
of course,
I do not like being confused by all these numbers so much. So I was looking around for any kind of reasoning on this, and to tell you the truth, I can't find it.
Yeah,
I just can't find it.
No, it's tough. What a shock! It's tough to read the post-COVID economy.
Yep, and I don't know how long we're going to have to say this, and we'll stop saying it as soon as it goes away. Mm-hmm. But right now, you got this yield curve that's just totally bonkers.
Yep.
And that has been the only truly reliable predictor of recession ever. I did hear one explanation that I loved this week. It sounded like clutching at straws. But they said, well, I think the yield curve doesn't understand that we already had that recession last year in the first two quarters. They just won't call it that.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really add up. There's too much collective wisdom that goes into that yield curve, and it's almost never wrong, and it's really weird.
Yeah, and there's another thing. There's another cloud on the horizon. You see the closing of oil this week?
82 or something like
82.4 or something like that. And did you see the rise at the pump over the last month or
I've
so?
Definitely seen that.
Says if you want to curtail the progress we've made on getting inflation down, you've got to turn around the oil price. And I have said this for every week since I can remember. Just build the pipeline, issue all the permits, and let the public loose on drilling. And it will fall before the price falls. It'll start the futures will start the fall of the actual prices.
I'll take things that will never happen for $1,000.
Yeah, you got that right. I'm afraid that it will happen, but it's not going to happen until after November 5th of 2024.
And even that's a maybe.
That's a definite maybe at this point. What a screwy world we're living in these days. You know, when you read the news and then you look at the data and all that, they quite frequently do not seem to correspond very well.
No.
I guess that's a good reason to keep listening to the radio show and hopefully calling in with questions, because things are a little goofy out there. All right, we'll be right back after we pay some bills. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is open, and so are the lines. You can call 904-222-8255. Today's question: what interest rate are the Japanese, it's actually the Bank of Japan, actually allowing bond yields to rise to? And it has been a long time since this has happened. Just a whole number of percent.
But, oh, I just remembered.
Yes.
I got quoted in a CBSNews.com article called Experts Tips for Maximizing Your Savings Today. And it was just a little quote about high-yield savings accounts. I put the link on the website in the blog section. So go ahead and take a look at that. But basically just said what is a good option for cash you may need to access on a daily basis. And I recommended a high-yield savings account, which are currently at 4% or more. Mine just bumped up to 4.15.
Pretty nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, the funny thing about interest rates, the winners and losers are very, very easy to define.
Yeah, no doubt. The
only people who are neutral are neither a borrower nor a lender be.
So I'm fortunate because I already own a house, but I love this new interest rate environment for the purposes of helping clients achieve retirement goals, because
with less risk.
Yes, it is so nice. It makes our job so much easier and better. And I hated the process of getting here and all the hikes. That was awful. But now that we're here, I am really very happy with 5% return on treasuries. It's been fantastic.
Well, unless you're really, really young, you probably still remember that interest rates like today's used to be pretty common.
Low. Yeah. Yeah. If anything.
In fact, we used to beg for them.
Yeah.
And everybody understands exactly what I'm talking about there if you lived in the late 70s and early 80s.
I do feel bad for people that have to buy a house in the last year with 7% interest rates and 30% higher prices. That is a rough combination.
Yep. And people who want to move, upgrade or whatever. Yeah. And they can't sell their,
we all feel
sitting on a 3% mortgage.
We all feel trapped for sure.
Exactly. And that has the intended effect of slowing down commerce, which will have a deleterious effect on increasing inflation. So,
yeah, but eventually
it's a self-correcting problem.
The longer they stay around, the more people get used to them, and eventually.
Yeah. And all that said, we still have a dramatic shortage of housing, and the home builders are doing great.
Yes, they are, especially around Jacksonville.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of my little peccadilloes, I loved it. These cards you get in the mail, they're advertising the bad chicken dinner things, come free for a seminar and this and that. I got one. I usually don't talk about them. I do one once in a while when it's interesting. So I get this one, and it's at the Outback Steakhouse. Okay, it's not one of the real high-end things, but what the heck. So what are they doing here? Well, some topics of discussion. The bona fide ways to get out of a timeshare contract when it no longer suits your needs.
That sounds great.
Doesn't it?
But I have heard very poor things about those companies.
If you want to look at a couple examples, Dave Ramsey is getting sued by a bunch of people because he represented in commercials on his show a timeshare company that, let's say, it did not do as advertised. Mm-hmm. But if you really want to know about timeshare, go to Clark Howard's website and read his bit on the companies that were supposedly get you out of your timeshare. The bottom line on a timeshare is the best way to get out of it is never buy one.
Don't ever do it. It's such a poor financial decision.
It is.
And We have a personal they're still sending you bill. My grandmother owned a timeshare in Hilton Head, and they are still, you disinherited it and said, no, I don't want it.
I didn't have to inherit it, so I didn't.
Okay, so, because, but they're still sending you bills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, because on the front of this card, it says Marilyn Van Wee.
Oh, wow. Okay.
My mother died in December of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
This is addressed to her.
At your address?
At my address.
Interesting.
And I thought that was great. And what happened in Mom's case, because there's a bona fide problem out there. If your parents own a timeshare and their estate gets probated, you will wind up inheriting that timeshare, whether you want it or not. Now, if any of that happens to any of you, the first thing you do is contact an attorney and ask about disclaiming an inheritance. That may possibly get you out of it. The other way you can do it is to get lucky. That's what I did. Because Mom's estate wasn't large enough to probate, there was no reassignment of the title to me. And if I'd gotten it, I would have given it to my brother and not told him.
But the
I don't
thing
know
is,
if he's listening or not.
The thing is, they're still charging like, I don't know, $700 a year for a maintenance fee. But honestly, for that place that she had the timeshare, you could pay $700 and stay there the same amount of time.
You could.
There's absolutely no reason to have a timeshare for it. It just makes no sense.
If you're involved in one, know this. If you want out of it, don't believe most of these flyers you get. That's A. And deal with an attorney. But first, read what Clark says. He has a lot of good information on that website. And it will, first off, it'll scare you. And then it'll tell you the way to go about trying to get rid of it. But it's the only thing you can buy. Nobody can tell you what it's going to cost you over time.
Mm-hmm.
They have an unlimited ability to keep raising their prices. It's just ludicrous. So just thought I'd got to get a chuckle out of that. When you brought up Mom's, I was so happy because this was actually for her.
That's funny.
I'm forwarding it to her.
Did you see the United States got its debt downgraded?
That's the next thing.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Second time.
Yep.
Second service, second time. And the first one was in?
Like 2009 or
2011.
11, okay.
Who was the president in 2011?
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't, it feels a bit political-ish. I don't know why that they would decide now was the time to do that.
They're making a statement.
That we're...
Stop spending money.
Yeah, fair.
And that's really, it has long-term effects. They're not as short they're not going to kill us right now. But over time, the cost of capital for Americans is likely to rise a bit. And everybody knows, if they read anything at all, that there are a bunch of countries out there that are trying to establish a new reserve currency to replace the dollar. It is not going to happen on August 22nd, 2023, which I'm sure you will all read if you go into any kind of research on this. But on that day, the European countries are supposedly going to announce that they are going ahead with the development of a gold-backed currency, cryptocurrency, and their hope is to become the reserve currency of the world. But that's going to take a long time.
A long time.
If you look at the influence of the dollar here and see what would it take to wind all this down across the world, you can't imagine what a monumental task it is. It makes Schwab taking over TDA look like you're tying your shoes. And we're talking big, big, big. The other thing that's going on here that has a lot of people flustered is that the Federal Reserve developing its own central bank digital currency. And yes, they can. No, it will not replace the dollar. And they are, if you use it, and I would never use it unless forced to, they will be able to track your purchases. The ultimate goal for all the conspiracy theorists and so on, of which I can be one here and there, know that, yes, they're trying to control what you buy, and it's starting with things like credit cards, where certain credit cards will not accept transactions from gun stores and certain banks won't bank gun stores and things like that. They are getting in our way for now, and it'll probably get nothing but worse, but hopefully it'll slow down after 2024 when people finally come to their senses and realize what we've done by getting this administration back in again. So don't fret the way a lot of people are fretting about what's about to happen. All right, that I got a book review. I actually have two of them. And I'll tell you something that you haven't heard from me before. Those of us who are in the vein of loving 1984 and Atlas Shrugged and Animal Farm, that group where the early 50s authors looked forward and said they didn't like the way society was shaping up and how individuals were being lost, and much of it's come true, a whole bunch of it's come true. But the other one in that vein, and I think I've read it a long time ago, my wife said she didn't read it, it's called Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. He was a Brit, and I'm going to recommend that you don't waste your time on the book. It makes all the right points, all the ones from all the other books that I just mentioned, but it's written in a manner that is very sort of highbrow. A lot of the references are purely British, and I don't get them because I haven't studied all of their history and literature and so on. I think it's fundamentally a real good academic type book. Don't waste your time. Read something more fun. And if you want to read something a lot more fun, I definitely like 1984 and The Creature from Jekyll Island, both of which I've reviewed before. Now, the second one will come in right after the break, and it's going to be sort of another change of pace for my usual. So don't go away. We'll let you know. All right, we got to pay a few more bills, take one more break, and then, oddly, the show gets toward the end real fast.
It does.
This is the Banway Financial Hour. We'll see you in a minute. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Banway.
And the lines are still open, and the trivia question is unguessed at this point. How high has the Bank of Japan now allowed interest rates on their bonds to rise? And it's been a while. All right, now, second book. I'm going to absolutely certify entrance into the Nerd Hall of Fame with this one.
Oh, you were the charter member.
I think I'm still executive VP or something like that. And, of course, the recording secretary would be your mother, my wife, because the topic of this one is grammar. Don't go away.
No, I fell asleep for a minute.
We raised him. This book is called... I can't remember. The comma goes there. And it is absolutely fabulous.
Come on.
It's a book about punctuation. It is absolutely fabulous.
You've sunk to a new low. I can't even believe it.
Well, I think you're probably just jealous. But if you have to do any writing, or if you'd like to do any writing for that matter, and I write a lot because I publish a blog every week and things like that, plus a bunch of pieces for the radio show, and learning some fine points of punctuation really helps. It also helps when you know how to write them. It helps your speech so you can do more things right with less thinking about it. The real problem I see, and the only reason I get so intrigued with all this stuff, is if you had a particularly word-specific need for an employee, and I always think of attorneys who want to hire junior attorneys and write briefs and that sort of thing, you have to know how to say what you mean and mean what you say. And the classic example over the years that Sarah and I have laughed about, called the Oxford comma, which is also called the Harvard comma, but I don't give Harvard credit for anything, so we'll stick with the Oxford. That's the one that we were all raised. They say you put commas in a list of things, you put commas in between all the entries, but not between the last two. Now, the Oxford comma goes way back as being a potential problem into, where's about 1890, I believe it was. And because we have a phone call, interrupt this and come back and make my point. Good morning, David.
Yeah, hey, morning. Yeah, I was interested. You heard the headlines in the last day or so about how America's bond rating was dropped to, what, AA+?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's some intentional sabotage in that. And let me see if you agree. You remember a few months ago, the Saudi Arabians said that they wanted to abandon the American dollar, mm-hmm. and they wanted to sell their oil with some other world currency.
Yep.
And so right away, Congress ruined America's credit rating by refusing to come up with a budget. They just went out of their way all the beginning of the year to refuse to do their job and make it a budget for America. And yeah. as far as I understand, they still haven't done it, right?
No, they use the term omnibus rather than budget, which means we just keep spending money and add your age. That's it.
Yeah, with no like official contract,
right.
No spreading the responsibility from department to department. And so they're basically... you know, the U.S. House of Representatives, is their specific job is to put together a budget.
Mm-hmm.
And for them not to do it and then come up with lame excuses about not doing it kind of ruins America's credit rating.
Well, if you remember when Kevin McCarthy was, I don't want to say begging for the job, but he was trying to justify having him get the job, one of his major promises was that he would not sign an omnibus bill again, but rather all of the departments would have to submit and get past individual budgets. Well, guess what time of year it's getting to be here?
Mm-hmm.
It's the 5th of August, and the 30th of September is year end, and after that, you got to do something. So they did what they always do at a time of severe crisis. They went on vacation.
Kick the can
down
the road.
Yeah, and as I understand it, they are now planning on shutting down government at the end of September when they get back, right? They're going to take a six-week vacation?
I think they just started that, didn't they? Aren't they taking the rest of August off? I think they're only, generally speaking, when they get back from their summer vacation, there's only a couple weeks left to get all this stuff done, which is their version of pushing through the omnibus. Now, how can McCarthy stop that from happening? Well, he can use some CRs, continuing resolutions, department by department, to go for a while. But how long will we the people stand for him fudging it that way when he promised to do it right? That's my question. I guess it's not rhetorical, but it's something that'll take some time to answer.
Well, I'm looking at, you know, if the U.S. dollar is the world's currency,
yep.
you know, if all of the other currencies of the world are based upon the U.S. dollar,
well,
and that's something that has never
not all of them.
Well, most of them, anyway. I mean, the reputable ones.
Yeah.
But the idea that they would decide to, what are they going to use? Putin as a fallback?
Well, we were just talking about this a little bit, and this has already been going on for a couple of decades, so everybody knows. And what they're trying to do now is come up with a new digital one, and it's going to involve an awful lot of countries. But what's kind of concerning to me, the only part that's real super concerning, is that most foreign governments are hoarding gold right now. They want to... They're not going to be able to trade off the full faith and credit of the United States against an unknown currency unless that unknown currency is backed in gold. So they're buying like crazy.
Well, but they knew King Croesus was like, what, 2,500 years ago, 3,000 years
mm-hmm.
ago, and he knew there was never enough tons of gold to deal with every project a nation needed to do.
Exactly.
And so you can't run an honest government on gold because there's not enough tons. But education was used as everything that was developed before as working assets, and then education to expand upon your future were seen as the new value. And so the International Monetary Fund and the United States have been going with that since the end of World War II.
Yeah, and the problem with that is that the value of the dollar continues to shrink, and we've lost 97% of our purchasing power in 110 years.
Well, but if somebody went out of their way to diminish the education system, to steal the books out of the school text and ban teachers and all this sort of junk, they diminish the reputation of an education system, they're diminishing a whole nation's future.
Yeah, I think,
and that's a further sabotage of the U.S. dollar, and I think the Republicans are on the take with the Saudis to do that.
Oh, you count on that a little bit. I think that there's a lot more to the whole downgrading thing. I think some of it's cosmetic. Some of it is making a statement. Stop spending so much money. But, for instance, India has been trading oil with Iran in dinars
for years.
So it used to be all international transactions used the reserve currency ever since Bretton Woods. But they're breaking away from that slowly. It's going to take some time, but yes, everybody's got us in their crosshairs, and they want us to be diminished, and they're doing a lot of things.
Well, I'm thinking it's a sabotage. It's not it's not snipes from the other side. The other side want a good currency. They don't want to be backed by Putin.
Yep.
They don't want to be backed by. I don't even believe that China is really communist. They rent their land to sweatshops. And that's not something a communist would do.
But,
and, you know, the communism got started on stopping sweatshops. And that, you have a phony country like claiming to be communist and having sweatshops?
Yeah, well, you and I agree on an awful lot of things, and it's a bit of a topic for another day because I've only got a minute left and I got a couple things to wrap up.
Well, I was going to say, BRIC, that was also including India.
Yeah.
And India, with Modi, he's trying to get, the untouchables back. He wants to diminish the quality of his own people, which would be diminishing the quality of India.
Yeah.
And so anybody want their currency backed on BRIC? You got Putin, China, and so the U.S. dollar, they're intentionally ruining it by diminishing our education.
I agree, but I've got to run. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
We'll talk to you later. Yeah, you know, it's all true. The death of a great country is always a suicide. That's the quote I like. And I don't have a name on this caller, but good morning.
Hi, good morning. It's Mike.
Hey, Mike, what's happening?
Hey, well, another rough week for this country.
Yep. That's for sure.
I know time's running short. I'm going to take a shot at the question.
Sure, okay. Go for it.
I think it was, I saw in CNBC that the 10-year Japanese bond rose to 0.57%.
And that's not the answer, but it's indicative of the answer. So, because
thanks.
We're within our last minute, if you can keep listening, I'll give the answer as soon as we get off. So, okay. Anyway, they allowed it to go to 1%.
Yep.
It hasn't quite gotten there yet. But when you consider that for decades, the Japanese interest rate has been negative and it has not helped them one little bit, this is at least a little glimmer of hope for some people that are hopefully going to make their economy a little better. All right, thanks for listening. It's been an interesting day. I'll finish up my book report next week. This is the Banway Financial Hour.